From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of September 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, we'll catch up with Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds in Shelby County, Illinois. I bet he's on the farm this afternoon working. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast to see how long Matt and all the rest of the farmers will be able to stay in the field. It looks like it's going to be pretty dry in a good portion of the Corn Belt. We'll hear more from Mike Tenora. T-Storm weather out of Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is now here. He's at Zwicker Consulting back in Waco, Texas, after spending a little bit of time on the farm here in Illinois last week. Hey, Ben, Dan, thanks for being here. How was your trip last week?
It was real good. I had a good time visiting my dad, and of course I was back for a class reunion. I'm not going to tell anybody what the years were. I'll let people guess on that one. But it's been a few years, and I got to saw a lot of old high school friends, and we had a good time visiting about old times anyway.
Did you drive up and back?
Yes, we did. Yeah. It's easier sometimes to fly. By the time you go through the airport, go through TSA, and hee-haw around, I just soon drive. And that's what we do. We still can drive it in one day. I don't know how many times I'll be able to do that. I think those days are kind of getting numbered. But if you get an early start, you can do it in one day. Pretty good time.
So you've done that a couple, two or three times this year, at least a couple of times during the growing season. How do things look from Texas to Illinois?
Pretty good. There's not much harvest going on. You can tell that we're still a week or two away. I did see on my way down the beans. There was a few bean fields that I saw that were getting ready. And I would suspect that the warm weather that we're having, we're going to see, you know, a pickup of harvest activity here in another week or two. And that this is going to be the real test of the market, I believe.
And well, tell me about that and what you see at this point technically.
Well, let's start off with beans. Beans, of course, has got the best fundamental news. We had a good, strong weekly export sales number, and then we had more additional sales, individual sales announced on top of that. So the demand equation for soybeans remains very strong. The month of September is a very dominantly seasonally down month. Very rarely do corn and soybean futures close higher during the month of September. And, you know, there's nothing exact science in this, but 8 out of 10 years, you usually close lower. We still have a week to go, but as the market is as of today, we are higher for the month on soybeans. And when I look at some of my technical indicators, it does say that volatility is going to pick up in beans. And I don't, it doesn't necessarily tell you whether the volatility is going to be to the upside or the volatility is going to be to the downside. But I do think we're going to see a pickup of volatility here take hold sometime next week, if not maybe, you know, the first part of October. But we are going to see some volatility. The open interest in soybeans has been declining. So you basically had been seeing some short covering, but the last couple days here, yesterday we saw an uptick in open interest. So that tells you that there is some new buying coming into the market after a period of basically short covering, a couple weeks of almost 3 weeks of short covering, which was holding the beans up. And as I've mentioned before, beans is where all the shorts are at. Farmers have been told to sell $10 beans all winter long, and they're still being told to sell $10 beans. So That's where the shorts are at. And you can tell by the way the demand has come forward that, those shorts have had to cover and buy their way out of that position because the bean market would not necessarily break on them. So either they were buying beans from farmers and liquidating their shorts and moving those beans into the export market. Don't necessarily know who's holding which position. But the open interest did increase yesterday. I don't know what it did today. We'll find that out tomorrow. But it is a good sign that beans have been able to hold sideways in here. We're higher for the month, basically due to short covering. But now here we're starting to see a pickup, an increase in open interest. So I think it's telling me that the market is waiting to hear actual yield results. And depending upon what those yield results are, it'll be whether or not we break to the downside or we break to the upside. Now, seasonally, when you go counter seasonal and you're able to make headway actually swimming upstream, when you start swimming downstream, then it's easier to go up. So beans and both same way with corn. Corn's a little different, but beans is more dominant that you kind of make a seasonal low during the first week of October, and then you basically climb higher then as you go through the rest of the year. So we got another week of downward momentum and seasonalities. We start off the first part of October with seasonalities beginning to turn up. So if beans are able to hold together through next week and then the seasonals begin to kick up, then my biases would be that the bean market is going to take off to the upside. But like I said, we still got another week here. We got to see how things go. Corn, we're down for the month. We're still seasonally correct on corn, but we really haven't made much headway on corn. You look at that, it's mostly a sideways market. I look at some of the technical indicators, and they're indicating to me that maybe the downward momentum for corn should subside. That doesn't mean that we're going to have a harvest low because, you know, everything's a little later this year. We're 2 weeks late due to the growing degree days, and we really don't know where corn's at until we get into a little more active harvest. But corn, at least as of today, we are down for the month. Now, beans or wheat, we're up for the month. So wheat is actually in a better technical position to maybe strengthen as you go into October, November. Same way with beans. Corn is still kind of up in the air, maybe could be kind of sideways. I don't see farmers being aggressive sellers of corn at this price level. Unless they get into the fields and begin to find out that maybe these yields are better than expected, then that'll be a little different story. But I think up to this point, for the most part, at least visiting with farmers, a lot of them don't really want to agree with the USDA numbers. And I think that's what's kind of been holding up farmer sales. They want to actually get out there and see what they actually do have. I think there's a real suspicious that USDA may be a little high on both corn and soybean yields.
So the trade and farmers both cautionary, and it looks like they're each waiting to see what the monitors show when they begin the combine. I guess it's just a wait and see at this point. And then, of course, we have the grain stocks report due out on Friday of next week.
Yeah, and the grain stocks report, I mean, just looking at the way the market has performed during the month of September, it would imply that we may end up having a larger corn stocks than maybe what USDA has in the ending stocks number. And the soybean number may be smaller than what USDA basically has on the balance sheet. And I'm just basically taking a wild guess the way the market has performed here since September 1st. And, you know, soybeans have increased in value, so that indicates that maybe supplies ain't quite as large as what USDA's got on the balance sheet. And corn prices have steadily declined slightly. So the corn number could be probably a little slightly higher. I mean, that's just a wild guess based upon the way the market has performed over the past 30 days.
Well, we'll know more when we get to Thursday, at least about maybe a few early indications of what the crop looks like as far as yields go across the Midwest when we talk to you next Thursday. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, the United States Environmental Protection Agency is mulling over some options on dicamba. EPA aims to allow farmers to use dicamba next year, but with additional rules in place. An EPA official in the agency's Office of Pesticide Programs told Reuters this week the agency had not yet determined what steps it would take to mitigate problems associated with dicamba. EPA officials have met with state regulators to find ways to prevent crop damage, along with negotiating with herbicide companies BASF and Monsanto. The comments by the EPA hint that the agency is unwilling to set a ban on the product after a certain date that would prohibit post-emergence or over-the-top spraying of dicamba. An EPA official told state regulators the agency was very concerned with what had occurred and transpired in 2017 and says his agency is committed to taking appropriate action for the 2018 growing season with an eye towards ensuring that the technology is available and that growers use it responsibly. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll take up a couple of trade items. The first is NAFTA. The third round of the formal negotiations of the North American Free Trade Agreement gets underway next week in Canada. The meeting follows the first set of talks in D.C. and the second round of talks held in Mexico City. However, rounds one and two were largely uneventful, with little resolution on the major trade issues between the NAFTA partners. And there's a hinting from the administration that a deal may be reached. Any negative trade impacts to agriculture would be significant. Mexico exports $23 billion of agricultural products to the United States, while Canada exports $22 billion. Canada and Mexico are top markets for U.S. agricultural products as well. Corn exports to Mexico alone are worth $2.6 billion. While soybean exports south of the border are estimated at about $1.5 billion, it's also estimated the United States exports about $4.8 billion worth of fresh and processed fruits and vegetables to Canada. And finally today, a coalition supporting ag exports is urging senators to pass legislation to expand the Market Access Program and Foreign Market Development Program. The Coalition to Promote U.S. Agricultural Exports and Agribusiness Coalition for Foreign Market Development say the Cultivating Revitalization by Expanding American Agricultural Trade and Exports, or CREATE Act, would boost trade's impact on U.S. farmer profitability and the economy. The bipartisan legislation follows a House version of the bill introduced in May. The bill would increase statutory funding for the programs, which are now authorized at $200 million a year for MAP and $34.5 million a year for FMD. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, the White House and GOP congressional leaders are considering ditching the estate tax repeal and other tax breaks that Democrats charge favor the wealthy. The idea is to pick up Democratic votes by shaping tax reform more toward the middle class. Democrats argue estate tax repeal would benefit only the wealthy, those who die with more than $5.5 million in their estates, and would boost the federal debt. Republicans say the tax levied at death is unfair and simply needs to go. Here's how the American Farm Bureau Federation tax advisor Pat Wolf sees it.
There's a lot of talk right now about writing a tax bill that helps the middle class and doesn't provide as much relief to high-income taxpayers. And for some reason, people seem to think that the estate tax only impacts high income rich people. That's just not true.
Wolf has argued for years that the estate tax impacts middle income farmers and ranchers who need repeal to pass their businesses on to the next generation.
It takes a lot of land and other assets to run a farm business. So on paper, a farmer may look like he is rich, but that is not money that's sitting in a bank and can be used to take cruises and buy yachts. That's money that's tied up in a business. And a farmer and rancher, when you look at their income, is probably a middle-income taxpayer.
The Washington Post reports that reconsideration of key parts of the GOP tax plan just a week before leaders say they'll unveil it says there could still be changes or reversals. Wolf offers this.
We can tell that we're getting close to the finish line with tax reform because ideas are being floated every 5 minutes about what has to be in there, what doesn't have to be in there.
The Republican conference is meeting this weekend, and Wolf says AFBF expects details of a proposal could be released early next week. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Farmers have until the end of this month to decide if they'd like to take USDA's new Margin Protection Crop Insurance Plan. Known as MP, the program closely aligns with the current ARP, or Area Revenue Protection Crop Insurance Plan. University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke says while there are differences, the one of note is the price-setting period. It locks in input prices, the margin, based on corresponding futures traded in Chicago for urea, DAP, diesel fuel, and interest rates.
The other side of it, that you might be interested in is setting a projected price now versus in February. So we know that our projected prices for margin insurance are $3.96 for corn and $9.66 for soybeans. So we do know those now. So if you wanted to set those now, you could use margin protection. You could also go up to a 95% coverage level. So that would be an advantage.
The U of I Schnitke doesn't see any compelling reason for ARP users to switch to margin protection. And while the plan could be coupled with RP, he thinks the number of takers there will be limited. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenor is here. He's from T-Storm in Chicago. Mike, let's start in South America today. Many have been wondering when Brazil, Mato Grosso in particular, some other states there, might begin to get their annual rainfall started for their planting season.
More than likely, it will start up next weekend and then the following week. Their climate turned sharply wetter over the last half of September and especially in October. So we should start seeing some of these rains occur. A number of computer models hint at rainfall starting up in 10 days or so, and we think that is going to happen. So the dry weather that they've seen over the course of the last 4 months, which is very normal of their climate, is going to come to an end here in about 10 days, and then things should start to improve from a soil moisture perspective.
Here in the Midwest, across the whole of the Corn Belt, do we have much rainfall?
There's not going to be a whole lot of rain in the Corn Belt. It will rain a lot, though, in the plains. We'll have a couple of different storm systems move across the U.S. from Friday through Wednesday coming up. And the way it looks right now, both of those systems will have a lot of difficulty crossing the Mississippi River. Because of that, each system will produce a lot of rainfall in the same area, and that's why we're expecting heavy rain in the plains starting up Friday and Saturday and then continuing in different areas through the middle of next week. By the time all is said and done, most of the winter wheat belt of the plains will have received 1 3/4 of an inch to 3.5 inches of rain. Todd, that is a lot of rain for a 5-day period in the plains. And it's enough rain to completely wipe out any threat of dryness all the way through next month. So at this point, even though you could argue that this is not the best scenario for planting, it's a near ideal scenario for wheat that is planted or will be planted later this month and in October.
On the subject of next month or October, what do you see as indicators for that month as we get into the harvest season full swing?
There's very little to no correlation between weather in September and weather in October across the central U.S. Because of that, we can't draw any conclusions. The only thing we do know is that the first half of September was very cool. The second half will have been very mild, but that doesn't really tell us much of anything for October. A lot of people always wonder at this time of the year, might an early freeze be coming? Well, the earliest freezes on record occurred at right about today's date in 1983 and 1995. So we can look out our window and see that we're nowhere in that territory at this point in time. Climatologically, the first freeze of the year typically begins around October 5th in the Dakotas and then shifts to the south and east over the next 3 to 4 weeks, eventually reaching southern Ohio by the last day of October. So we will see a freeze here at some point, most likely starting up in about 1 to 2 weeks in the Dakotas and then shifting to the south and east, eventually reaching Illinois by the middle to second half of next month.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago.